This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 6th of May 2016. Hello and welcome to Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 6th of May, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: inmate conned officer, health trust boss stays put, and royal visit to rehab centre. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was inmate conned officer. An investigation has been launched into the alleged smuggling of mobile phones into Winchester jail by prison officers. The probe after a prison worker narrowly avoided jail after forming an inappropriate relationship with an inmate. Sonia Knight, 22, Operations Support Officer, admitted the relationship but denied it was sexual, a court heard. The inmate, Jack McRae, on being transferred from Winchester Prison, told a duty officer about it and claimed they had kissed through a broken observation panel in his cell door. Knight told police that McRae had once tried to kiss her hand, but she pulled away. Knight told police that two other prison officers had illegally supplied a phone to McRae, the court heard. A Hampshire police spokesman said, "There is an ongoing investigation in relation to the phones referenced in this misconduct in public office case." Knight wept in the dock as the court heard that she had been groomed last autumn. She was persuaded to communicate with McRae and bought a Samsung mobile phone to contact him, said James Kellum, prosecuting. He said, "McRae was interested in the relationship becoming a romantic one, and it's possible what McRae was doing was, I hesitate to use the word, grooming. But he was trying to create a situation where Knight would be obliged to do more favours for him of an illicit nature." David Reed, mitigating, said Knight knew it was a naive error of judgment, a single foolish occasion of giving McRae her phone number. From that point on, she was compromised. That took place at the end of October last year. She accepts that from then on she was open to pressure, and towards the end of his time in Winchester, that pressure was duly applied. Since her arrest, the defendant has cooperated fully. She provided the names of two prison officers she believed to have supplied phones to McRae. She doesn't know what, if any, action resulted. Knight, previously of good character, admitted one charge of misconduct in public office. She was jailed for 8 months, but the sentence was suspended for 18 months. She was also ordered to do 200 hours unpaid work and £200 of costs. Sentencing, Judge Susan Evans, QC, said it was a serious offence, undermining security and the rehabilitation of offenders. "I'm told you have a trusting nature, and you made a big mistake and gave your number to a manipulative individual, and once drawn in, it was too late for you." A prison service spokesperson said she had been sacked and added, "We welcome this sentence. There is no place for this kind of behaviour within the prison service. The service plans to work with network operators to challenge them to do more, including developing new technological solutions to block mobile phone signals in prison."
Health Trust boss stays put. The leader of an under-fire health trust has again refused to resign in the wake of a fresh report condemning it for failings in the reporting of hundreds of deaths of vulnerable patients. Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust Chief Executive Katrina Percy was clinging to her job despite the release of another damning report revealing, quote, serious concerns, unquote, over the organisation. Her refusal comes as Trust Chairman Mike Petter resigned last week ahead of the latest scathing report. Senior Governor Mark Aspinall resigned last Friday, accusing governors of a, quote, lack of drive and determination, unquote, to press managers to improve standards. Now, leading politicians and grieving families demanded more leaders must be held to account. As one mother revealed, she's considering legal action. It comes as bosses came under further fire after an inquest heard how a vulnerable Hampshire man, discharged by Southern Health without informing his family, could have been dead in his home for 6 months before his body was discovered. The latest report follows inspectors from the Care Quality Commission, CQC, visiting 10 trust sites across the South. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt ordered the probe following the release of the Mazars inquiry, which revealed that of the 10,306 deaths between 2011 and 2015, 722 were categorised as unexpected, but only 272 were investigated. The watchdog was also checking whether the trust has made improvements following another comprehensive inspection in October 2014. The latest report reveals there were, quote, deficiencies, unquote, in the new system for reporting and investigating deaths, which had been introduced after the Mazars report, relating to accuracy and timescales. But it also highlighted further safety and security risks, including a low roof at the acute ward in Melbury Lodge in Winchester, where in February one patient had used it to escape, while another had been injured while trying to climb onto it. But inspectors did find some improvements to the environment in child and adolescent mental health inpatient and forensic services. CQC inspectors are expected to return and are working with NHS Improvement, and NHS England will monitor the Trust's progress. Sarah Ryan, mother of Connor Sparrowhawk, who died in Trust care, said, "It's scandalous that the board is still in position. It is shameful and we're considering taking legal action." Ms. Percy refused to resign and said, quote, "I want to reassure our patients, their families and carers that I'm absolutely focused on addressing the CQC's concerns and supporting our staff to provide the best care possible." And there is a small picture of Katrina Percy under pressure and looking as if she is.
Royal visit to rehab centre. Hampshire welcomed Prince Harry, who visited a rehabilitation centre near Winchester. His Royal Highness first saw the work. His Royal Highness saw firsthand the work Hobbs Rehabilitation in Martha Worthy do. The visit is part of his role as the patron of the Rugby Football Union Injured Players Foundation, the official charity of England Rugby. He discovered how the charity provide for seriously injured rugby players and took time to meet some of them and view the latest technology available in the field of neurological rehabilitation. Hobbs Rehabilitation, in partnership with the Injured Players Foundation, provides specialist rehabilitation to players injured while playing rugby under the Rugby Football Union's jurisdiction. A team of over 60 specialist clinicians, including physiotherapy, occupational therapy, and speech and language therapy, provide intensive inpatient and outpatient rehabilitation from the Hobbs Centres in the south of England. Helen Hobbs and Nikki Ellis said, "We are extremely proud of the service we provide to the injured players here at Hobbs Rehabilitation. To have Prince Harry join us was such an honour. Our commitment to the research and development of new therapies is paramount, and we hope to include some of the players in our current research study for the latest model of exoskeleton, which we demonstrated at our recent spinal cord injury conference. Mike England, IPF director, said, "We support players with catastrophic spinal cord and brain injuries that result in significant permanent disability to empower them to live a full and independent life. Our collaboration with Hobbs Rehabilitation is a great success, and we are delighted to be here today to share information on new advances in technology. Their leadership in this area is a real asset for our injured players and ensures they have access to the very best neurological rehabilitation available." And there are photographs, a number of photographs, one a masked photograph of injured players, support staff, physiotherapists, nurses. Two of Prince Harry, watching on to work of rehabilitation being done by members of staff. And the main photograph of Prince Harry, and on each side has Helen Hobbs and Nikki Ellis outside the Hobbs Rehabilitation Centre.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person in Belgarum, and then announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Amis, Joan Amis, died suddenly on the 23rd of April, aged 94. Dykes, Roy Dykes, known as Dickie, retired Lieutenant Commander, who died on the 27th of April, aged 96. And Roy's devoted his later years to securing campaign medals for those who served on the Arctic convoys in World War II. Gibson, Elizabeth Ann Gibson, died peacefully at home in Upper Weald, aged 77. Harper, Nancy Margaret Harper, the founder of the Miss Harper Nursery in St. Cross, has died aged 83. Lindsay, Sheila Lindsay, died peacefully on the 20th of April, aged 90. Page, Alan Page, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 94. Smith, Joan Smith, died peacefully at Abbots Barton Nursing Home, aged 93. Soons, Peter Soons, died on the 16th of April, aged 86. And Stoney, George Sinclair Stoney, died at home after a long illness, aged 87. And now we move on to a Christian comment read by Albie.
And this week it's under the heading "When Politics and Religion Should Mix." Last Sunday, and this coming Sunday, the themes for most Christian church services is about the coming of the Holy Spirit. Jesus warns his disciples he will be leaving them again, which is celebrated today as the Feast of the Ascension, but will be sending something or someone to take his place and be by their side in all the adversities that their lives may hold for them in the days ahead. Christians still believe the Holy Spirit comes to them in the same way. Last Sunday, as well as referring to this forthcoming celebration, I also preached on the story of Lydia and how, as a consequence of meeting the Apostle Paul in Philippi Acts 16, she became a Christian. We are told that it is not just what Paul said to her, but that the Holy Spirit had already opened her heart so that she was ready to receive his message. I've never really been one for preaching from street corners and have never been convinced that it is the way to spread the good news of the gospel. I have wondered if this suits my natural inclination or whether it's a suitable excuse. I'm not even sure we should expect non-Christians to come to believe just because we provide schools and hospitals for them. Tell them about the Christian faith if they want to know, but not push it onto them. Today, it is the local elections and the election of police and crime commissioners. Wales and Scotland are voting, and London is electing a new mayor. I'm not very keen on people knocking at our door to canvass our vote, but we have received very little information. Two leaflets from the same party, and one for someone standing for police and crime commissioner. We do want to know and are prepared to receive the information, but without the internet, the word would not have reached us. In scanning the Methodist Church website recently, I was intrigued to see a heading, Think, Pray, Vote, and an advert for a newsletter called Praxis. It seems that this is an e-newsletter put together by some of the non-conformist churches, Baptist, Methodist, Church of Scotland, and United Reformed Church, on public issues of relevance to Christians today. It is providing an unbiased resource for Christians. The current issue is about the referendum on Europe. I found the newsletter with some difficulty and wonder how many others actually know about it, especially those without computers. It's one thing to push information and quite another to provide it in accessible form in case people should want it. It has been said that religion and politics shouldn't be mixed, but on issues of social justice, it certainly should if we seek to follow Jesus. So as Christians, we do need to get involved. Hopefully, as we think, pray, and vote, the Spirit will be with us. And that comes from Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki.
Headed Denying Justice, and this from Jeff Naylor. Sir, police forces and those in authority over us generally do themselves and those they purport to support an enduring disservice when they deny truth and justice. The tale of the Hillsborough tragedy is a story writ small for the history of people everywhere. It gives a glimpse into the underlying reason for unresolved global conflicts. If the humble people of Liverpool had not been able to establish the truth of what had happened on that fateful day, a massive lie would have been written into the history books. This unjust denial of the essential need of the victims' loved ones to establish the truth would have bred long-lasting distrust and disrespect for authority and policing in particular. Another narrative would have been established, one that would be passed down from generation to generation, that authority is anti-people and cannot be trusted. This would lead to unrest, dissent, and more. When those in authority recognise the veracity of this, they will understand that truth and justice denied or delayed makes the job of keeping public order much more difficult and is not conducive to the bringing about of harmonious societies. And that from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Coldon Common.
Next letter is from Kezia Hoffman of Stockbridge Road, Crawley, headed Inaccurate Slur. Sir, a Conservative candidate, Paul Twelvetree, suggests, April the 28th, that the fact that I do not live in St Barnabas Ward, where I am standing as an independent, makes me ineligible to represent the interests of the people who live there. There is a reason I live outside my ward, and his unnecessary slur provides me with an opportunity to highlight some key facts. I cannot afford to live in the city of Winchester. I am employed part-time and self-employed for the rest, with two teenagers. I have been priced out of the city I've lived in for 21 years. Paul Twelvetree would know this if he'd accepted his invitation to last week's Meet the Candidates discussion, with the local community, organised by North Winchester Community Forum. If he had attended, he would have heard the anger many people feel about overpriced new social housing, among many issues on which they feel let down by present and past city councils. He would also have learned that I spent 3 years doing youth work in St Barnabas, campaigning with teenagers in Week and Hairstock for improved youth and community facilities, and that I worked with these young people to create the biggest community event that Week has seen to date, including climbing walls, a skateboarding school, dancing, music and cooking, which turned out to be the perfect way to gather ideas from local people about what they want in their area. I want politics in Winchester to be rid of mudslinging of the kind typified by Mr. Twelvetree's letter. We need a culture shift in local politics to one that listens to and works with communities, and in which councillors work democratically together to provide sensible answers to local needs. Independent councillors all over the country are making that shift happen. Kezia Hoffman, Stockbridge Road, Crawley.
Now we have a letter from Catherine Turness, Executive Director, Winchester Business Improvement District, Parchment Street, Winchester, on the subject of rough sleepers. Sir, I would like to respond to Mr. Bell's letter of concern published in last week's Chronicle in regards to the BID's consideration of positioning planters in doorways of shops to prevent rough sleepers. I would like to reassure Mr. Bell and the rest of your readership that this was merely a suggestion picked up from a successful initiative in Aldershot. It is one of a number of ideas being discussed with Winchester City Council and the landlords of the vacant units in the High Street. As it is private property, the overall decision lies with the owner of the building. I note Mr. Bell's suggestion of engaging our members to help Trinity and Winchester Church's night shelter. I'm disappointed to hear he is unaware of the Spare Change for Real Change scheme we facilitate with both charities. More than 50 of our members have chosen to have a collection box in their venue, and both Steve Bryan MP and I were delighted to present £1,500 to the charities at a business breakfast earlier this year. Thus, we are very much aware of and support the good work of both charities to help those in need of assistance. We work closely in partnership with a number of agencies, including Hampshire Constabulary, the Street Pastors, the local authorities and the aforementioned charities, to ensure Winchester remains safe and secure for our members, their shoppers, clients and staff, and of course visitors and residents alike. We work together to ensure that those that need help are being signposted to the right services and try to deter those that are abusing the system.
And from Sarah Robertson, Itchen Abbas, headed, "A big turnout for protest is positive. Sir, I was delighted to read your article and photo, April 21, about the demonstration about the Alsford tip. It was very gratifying to see so many people there, worrying about the possible loss of a local facility. However, I was not so pleased to read Jackie Porter's comments in your Belgarum column. She was appalled about lots of locals turning up and joining her demonstration. We are constantly being told that the issue should come first and the political plugging later. I would have thought she would have been happy for the numbers to be swelled. Left to the Liberals, demo would have been very small." And that's from Sarah Robinson, Old Station Road, Itchen Abbas. And there's also a photograph of what was probably the original Liberal Democrat demonstration that Councillor Jackie Porter complained was hijacked by the Tories, and their signs that they're holding up, save our tip, count the CO2, get a grip, no car, no tip, save our tip, and don't dump the dump.
This is from Neil Hopkins, who's the former principal of Peter Simmons College in the London Road. Sir, I know that you like to celebrate the success of local authors, and I think that many of your readers will be interested to hear that Dr. Penny Morgan has just published her fourth book. Penny is well known locally from her time as head of psychology at Peter Simmons College, but after retiring early, she took yet another degree, this time in law, and now spends part of her time writing thrillers with an unusual animal welfare and environmental theme from her home in King's Somborne. Penny's first three books were published in paperback, but this newest edition, Trophy, is available online for e-readers. I'm still on the early chapters, but it looks as if it'll be as gripping as the others, and like in the others, there are many local references and settings. Penny makes good use in her books of her extensive understanding of the law, psychology, and human behaviour. She spreads a strong pro-conservation message, but via an exciting and pacey crime story, never preaching. Neil Hopkins, former principal of Peter Simmons College.
And Tim Major of Marston Gate Hyde, Winchester, writes under the heading Living with Result. Sir, Belgarum reported, April 21st, a sad pro-EU pollster noting that most pro-Brexiters are from the older generation who won't have to live long with the consequences. Actually, we are the ones who remember there was life before Britain joined the EU. I actually worked in France before we joined and saw firsthand that the cost of living in the then EEC was much higher than in Britain. Our decision to join in 1973 was born of desperation at having been reduced to penury by our government's ineptitude and by trade unions' turf wars. The EU did not fix either. Indeed, within 10 years, we were paying so much for membership that Margaret Thatcher had to fight to get an annual rebate of two-thirds of Britain's massive net annual subsidy. That lasted until 2005, when Tony Blair gave up half in return for promises to review EU farm spending in 2008. We rather missed that review in the collapse of Greece and the desperate fight to rescue the euro and all those well-regulated EU banks. I wonder how David Cameron's promises of reform will fare. If we remain, the younger generation, our descendants, so we do care, will pay more and more. Their money will go to fund an organisation so incompetent that it has failed for 21 consecutive years to explain to its own auditors how it has spent many of the billions each year which have passed through its sticky fingers. If it were a public liability company, most of its executives would be in jail. The only option Britain has is to leave and stop paying.
Thank you. Now we're going to step back in time, 100 years, starting with Nikki.
May the 6th, 1916. Germans repulsed. The following telegraphic dispatch, dated May the 2nd, 10:35 p.m., has been received from General Headquarters in France. A German attack east of Ypres last night, preceded by an hour's bombardment, broke down under our fire without reaching our lines. Another attempt by the enemy to leave his lines north of Albert was also stopped by our fire. Today there has been some artillery activity near Montauban, Thiepval, between Carency and Vermelles, east of Ypres. As a result of combats in the air yesterday, two hostile aeroplanes were driven down in damaged condition and were seen to land a short distance behind the German lines.
And 50 years ago, on May the 7th, 1966, school opening. After visiting the recent extension to the Winchester County High School for Girls, one gets the impression that this new building, erected at a cost of just over £160,000, is something more than just another school building. The main impression created in this new block is of space. This is heightened by the modern construction, with glass used to the best advantage. The 16 classrooms give the impression of being open on two sides the whole time. One of the most impressive features is the new hall, with its sunken floor and platforms on three sides. The second item is transfer refused. Toogood and Sons Limited, the seed merchants, have been refused permission by Hampshire County Council Planning Committee to move their headquarters from Southampton to a site in Roundhams, adjoining the County Council Gypsy Rehabilitation Centre. The decision was taken by the committee at their meeting in Winchester on Friday last week, despite an objection that there was already an agricultural depot and office on the site in question. The view of the majority was that a development proposed by Toogood was out of place in a proposed greenbelt area.
And two items from 25 years ago, on the 3rd of May 1991. Dispute over eyesore. Should an ugly brick building with a flat concrete roof be pulled down because it spoils the view of an elegant ancient monument? Yes, says Winchester City Council's deputy town planner Patrick Pym. No, says the mayor, Mrs. Pamela Peskett. The city's first lady and the planning boss crossed swords at last week's planning committee when the future of the disused pump house at Twyford Waterworks came under discussion. Last year, the council agreed that the pump house, known as the Rectifier House, could come down in order to improve the appearance of the waterworks, which is an ancient monument. And the second item, under the heading Teenage Warning, a county councillor has spoken out on the problem of inexperienced drivers involved in accidents after a couple of drinks. County Councillor Bill Alley, who is chairman of Winchester Road Safety Committee, said, "Young men who are inexperienced drivers are going out and having a drink or two. They're not over the limit, but they are also inexperienced drinkers, and the combination of the two is lethal. We have to get the message over that even two pints of beer can be dangerous. There have been a number of fatal accidents in this area involving young people, and we have to wake them up to the dangers."
Thank you. Now back to the present, and we've got editorial comment, first person, and Belgarum.
Editorial comment. The buck has to stop on someone's desk. Perhaps Katrina Percy, the embattled chief executive of Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, thinks that if she keeps her head down long enough, her critics will go away. She is mistaken. The calls for her resignation are widespread and overwhelming because she has singularly and clearly failed in her role. Yet another report has highlighted the failings at Southern Health, which runs, among many others, the hospitals at Melbury Lodge and Lee House Adolescent Unit in Alsford Road. Initial official criticism last year stemmed from its failure to properly investigate more than 1,000 unexpected deaths of people in its care. Now the latest CQC report has highlighted the Trust's chronic inability to sort itself out. The chairman, Mike Petter, bowed to the inevitable last week by resigning. It was the right, if belated, thing to do. But still Ms. Percy clings on. In 2012, she was hailed in the Health Service Journal Awards as Chief Executive of the Year for her ability to let her managers manage. Here lies the root of the problem, an ill-suited management style. She is handsomely paid to do an important job. With that remuneration comes responsibility. Is the Chronicle being old-fashioned when it suggests that with that responsibility comes the recognition that the buck has to stop somewhere?
The first person this week is by Khalid Aziz, and he entitles it Happy and Glorious. You know, we do put on a good do in Hampshire, and there was none better than the recent service in Winchester Cathedral to celebrate the Queen's 90th birthday. Jointly sponsored by the County Council and the Hampshire Lieutenancy, it was a quintessentially British, some would say English, affair. The great and the good, plus plenty of the kinds of citizens you hear very little about or from, mainly because their stories don't sell newspapers, coming together to celebrate, however you look at it, monarchist, republican, or just acquiescent, a truly remarkable life. What's more, the Queen looks fit to continue for many years to come. The cathedral service contained all the usual elements: coruscating music, Parry's I Was Glad, complete with congregational singing, or rather outcry, of Vivat Regina, Jerusalem, I Bow to Thee, My Country, the Hulse stunning tune Thaxted, though why he should have plumped for that particular Essex location is a mystery. Sounds more like Dunmo to me. We also had, to great relief all round, that all too rare feature of modern ecclesiastical running orders, hymns you actually know and don't require you to be a castrato to sing. Good to see the Dean at one of his last great set piece occasions before his retirement, in fine fettle, as he welcomed us with a vocal style evoking Trollopian times, but firmly rooted in the 21st century. James Atwell has been a worthy dean, and we shall miss him. The service started with processions of various clergy and dignitaries, including this year's newly minted High Sheriff, Tom Floyd, resplendent in velvet, lace and silk court dress. Also high profile were representatives from various Hampshire organisations, enjoying Her Majesty's patronage. There were readings too about Solomon from our Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson and from County Council Chairman John Glenn. His was a kind of biblical exhortation for ordinary folk not to forget how tough being a ruler stroke leader is at whatever level, monarch or local councillor. For me, there were two high points. First, a witty address from the Right Reverend John Wayne, former Bishop of Chelmsford and one-time Clerk of the Closet. As you stifle your titters at the somewhat curious title of this 600-year-old royal appointment, I should point out that the holder occupies quite a pivotal position in church hierarchy. Not that Bishop Wayne was too precious about it. He disclosed that on his appointment, a clerical colleague sent him a knitted loo roll cover, and the Archbishop of York, no less, inquired as to whether he would now be having regular sittings with that other butt of laboratorial humour, the Lord Privy Seal. Bishop Wayne was able to offer us some lighter insights into majestic life. Apparently, when the Queen was out and about in mufti, some innocent bystander, not realising who she was, told Her Majesty how remarkably like the Queen she looked. "How reassuring," came the reply. Perhaps the most telling moment was when ordinary members of the community read out prayers, culminating in Ayman al-Zitani of the Winchester Muslim Association. The programme said he was to read Gandhi's prayer for peace. He did, but not before he launched into an Arabic recital from the Quran. As he uttered the words, Bismillah, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent and the Merciful, from the front of the congregation, I could sense several sets of eyebrows quizzically being raised behind me. What was he saying? Mercifully, he translated. This was a part of the Quran overlooked by the likes of ISIS, the jihadis. Basically, the Quranic words say, it doesn't matter if you're a Jew, Christian, Muslim, or of any other religion. Live a good life, and the kingdom of heaven is yours. We would all utter a relieved amen, and how fitting it was for us to hear it while celebrating the Queen's astonishing life of service.
And now we come to Belgarum with an alternative look at the news. And the first item of three is under the heading Perfect Image of Hat Fair. The winning entry in last year's Hat Fair photography competition has gone on display at Winchester Railway Station. Graham Barber's picture of the amazing Mr. Fish will be used to promote this year's event, which runs from July the 1st to July the 3rd. Michelle Walker, Artistic Director of Hat Fair, said, Graham's photo really captured the atmosphere of Hat Fair. Graham was joined at the unveiling ceremony on Friday with Michelle and Eddie Latta, Winchester Station Supervisor. Winchester resident Graham explained how he took the winning photograph. Hat Fair photography is always very challenging because very often the performers are lost in the background crowds of people. I managed to get him isolated by lying uncomfortably on my back. He spotted me, rode straight at me, and feigned a panicky loss of balance. I caught the image at that point, before rolling out of the way in case it was for real. I like the resulting image, showing the fun of Hat Fair with the iconic cathedral in the background. The competition was open to members of Winchester Photographic Society. Hat Fair is Britain's longest running festival of outdoor arts. It began in 1974 and now presents over 200 music, dance, theatre and circus acts in more than 20 locations around Winchester. And there's a photograph of Michelle Walker and Eddie Latta and Graham Barber, the photographer. And on the wall behind at the railway station is this photograph of Mr. Fish, the amazing Mr. Fish, on a unicycle. A very tall unicycle, and he's so tall he has to have his legs strapped to the upright, and he's wearing a comical hat as well, and is just reaching that situation where it looks as though he's going to fall off just before Graham Barber rolled out of the way as he took the photograph. And the second item is again a cycle theme. Under Charity Cycle Ride is the heading. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance will be boosted by a charity cycle ride this Sunday. The Pioneer Cycling Club will be among the 500 to 600 cyclists taking part in the Hampshire Hilly 100, a demanding 100-mile ride. For the third year running, the Air Ambulance Charity has been selected as the event's charity partner. Pioneer Cycling Club cyclists, whose members include Air Ambulance trustee Jonathan Mosley, will don their ambulance cycling jerseys for the challenge. Last year, the Hampshire 300 raised £1,500 for the charity. Jonathan said, many of the air ambulance former patients are cyclists, and some have gone on to cycle the Hampshire Hilly 100 as their way of saying thank you to the charity. There is much goodwill towards air ambulance charity from the cycling community, and we are extremely grateful. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance flies 7 days a week and attends an average of 2 to 3 missions a day. And to keep it flying, the charity needs to raise around £230,000 a month. And finally, the third item, pulling out all the stops. The irony was not lost on the Dean, the very Reverend James Atwell, when he welcomed members of the East Surrey Organists Association to the cathedral on Saturday. The cathedral's magnificent 19th century organ had been taken poorly a couple of hours earlier and had to be replaced by a piano for 5:30 p.m. evensong. The organists from Surrey would have doubly appreciated the irony as the cathedral staged its own organ festival in the close 2 days later on Bank Holiday Monday. A cathedral spokesman said the problem was the equivalent of a fuse blowing and there had been no damage to the instrument. It was out of action for 3 days but was repaired on Tuesday. Needless to say, the powers that be had pulled out all the stops to get the instrument fixed. The organ is a unique instrument with a special history. It was the largest organ on show at the 1851 Great Exhibition and was installed in 1854.
Thank you, and that concludes all the items apart from what's on. And what's on for this week? On Wednesday, May the 11th, there's a lunchtime recital in Romsey Abbey at 1 p.m. It's free with a retiring collection for local charities. On Monday, May the 16th, in the Cathedral Undercroft at 3 p.m, there's tea at 3. That's a chance to meet friends and talk. So tea at 3, it's £2.50 in the Cathedral Undercroft, Monday 16th of May. On Monday the 30th of May, in Winchester Cathedral at 4 p.m, there's an organ recital. Of course, we hope the organ is now fully repaired and working, and there's no need to book for that, but you can just turn up for the cathedral organ recital, 4 o'clock, Monday the 30th of May. And finally, if you fancy an open-air venue for some Shakespeare, in Wolvesey Gardens at the Bishop's Palace, on Saturday the 4th of June at 7:30 p.m, the Rain or Shine Company present a Midsummer Night's Dream. That's on Saturday the 4th of June, 7:30 p.m. More information and tickets on 07774 852644. That's 07774 852644. The lighting up time ends Friday the 6th of May at 5:29 a.m. and begins at 8:36 p.m. On Wednesday the 11th of May, it ends at 5:21 a.m. and begins at 8:43 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
Zara set for her op after donor find. Winchester teenager Zara Al-Sheikh was due to have her bone marrow transplant tomorrow afternoon. A stem cell donor was found last month. The procedure will, it is hoped, cure the girl of her leukemia, which she has had for the past 2 years. Leading up to her transplant, the 13-year-old has been receiving chemotherapy at University College Hospital London. Zara's mum, Carenza, was unable to talk as she was at Zara's bedside. Last month, the Chronicle reported that the King's School pupil had found a match after months of searching. This included a donor drive held by her friends and family in Winchester, which saw more than 900 people register at St Peter's Church, Jury Street. Sarah of Nightingale Close found it harder than most to find a match, as her mother is English and her father is Iraqi. This means she has a more diverse tissue type, and her chances of a successful match were much slimmer. Zara went into remission late last year, but was told in January that the disease had returned. However, despite just a 4% chance of finding a match, she and her family are hoping that the procedure will be a success. And it's a lovely picture of Zara. As you may remember, Guy Kramer, they had a hair-cutting session, and he made her a wonderful wig, which, as her hair had been affected by the chemo. And she looks wonderful, and we wish her luck with her operation.
This is complicated. I'll read the text and stay with me, and I'll have a go at the photographs. Because chic students' eye business trends, glitz and glamour came to Winchester. Winchester Fashion Week, when students put their business skills and fashion knowledge on show. The week celebrated all things stylish and saw a week of events in the city. This included the RE Design Exhibition, where creatives created pieces from materials destined for the bin. There was also a workshop at Jeremy France Jewellers and a catwalk show at L.K. Bennett. Master's students at Winchester School of Art tried their hand at the world of upcycling and opened a pop-up shop at the old post office in Middlebrook Street. One of the highlights was their catwalk show in the Brooks Shopping Centre last Friday. The shop and catwalk was a collaboration with Oxfam, Winchester Fashion Week and the Brooks. More than 50 first-year students studying fashion, marketing and promotion at Winchester School of Art put their skills on show to manage both the shop and the catwalk show. One of them was Flavia Rotar, aged 19, who coordinated the shop. Flavia said, "It helped us get a glimpse of what working in the fashion world would be like." The week was rounded off with a grand finale catwalk show, attended by 200 people at Winchester Guildhall last Saturday. Teaching fellow for fashion marketing and promotion, Anna Pegg, was impressed with their efforts. And the photographs, well, they start with a big group photograph in the Brooks Centre of student organisers and models. So they're in their ordinary outfits, mostly, with great big letters. It looks as if they're lit up or something. WSA in front of them, which is the School of Art. Then underneath, there is a couple of photographs from the stylish evening of catwalk glamour, and two very elegant young ladies in what might one, I suppose, refer to as a little black dress, quite short, very high heels, elegantly walking along the catwalk, and wearing very interesting little, I won't call them hats, they're more like, what do they call them, tormentors. Some little creations on the top of their head.
Fascinators.
Pardon? Fascinators. Fascinators, not tormentors. Torments me to try and describe them. And then there's a grand finale in the Guildhall. This is a slightly unusual one. There are two guys and a girl, a lady. She is in the middle and she's wearing sort of faintly military looking sort of tunic.
Tormentors.
Same pun. They're not tormentors. One of the guys is wearing a sort of anorak thing and knee-length trousers with bright red socks and obviously some sort of hiking boot. And the other man is apparently carrying a rifle. He's dressed fairly in ordinary fashion with a tie and a three-quarter length jacket and ordinary trousers.
Follow that. Well, this article comes under the heading Council to Revamp Day Centre Service. No photographs. Day trips for older people and the disabled are set for an overhaul in Hampshire. The County Council is aiming to create a more personalised service by injecting competition into the market. Most activities based in day centres and designed to tackle isolation are provided by charities and private contractors. But the council, which commissions the service, says it is relying on a small pool of providers. The authority is due to roll out new contracts from 2017, which would see people pay per visit rather than monthly. The extra £1.1 million investment over the next 2 years, approved by Councillor Liz Fairhurt, Executive Member for Adult Care, Social Care, would bring contracts for the elderly and people with physical disabilities in line with the Council's learning disability services. There is a risk parts of the county will not be covered in a new two-stage process for awarding contracts, but the council says it is preparing backup.
Father's recovery from illness aired. The story of a Stockbridge man's fight to rebuild his body and his family after contracting a devastating illness has been shown on primetime TV. Father of one, Alex Lewis, saw his life turned upside down after he caught a bug which would eventually see him losing all four limbs and his face badly disfigured. Filming started just days after he lost his limbs, and a documentary maker has followed the Stockbridge dad's incredible story for the past 2 years as he rebuilds his life, his relationships, and reinvents himself. Channel 4 aired the one-hour documentary chronicling his story last Thursday night. In the show called The Extraordinary Case of Alex Lewis, the 36-year-old former pupil at Peter Simmons College in Winchester talked about he used to be an ordinary family man until a common cold would change the course of my life overnight. Now the story of how doctors worked to reconstruct his body and rebuild his face has been broadcast to millions of people on primetime TV. A spokesman for Channel 4 TV said, "With incredible access to a candid and inspirational family, this life-affirming film captures a man turning a horrific situation into a triumph of human achievement, as over 2 years he regains his personality and identity as a father and partner." In 2013, Alex was hit by the same bug which causes a minor sore throat, but left him in a coma, wired up to machines and fighting for life. In an extremely rare case, the cold developed into toxic shock syndrome with shattering effects. His legs and an arm were so badly infected that they had to be amputated to stop the infection spreading. For months, surgeons battled to save and rebuild Alex's right arm, seen as crucial to leading any kind of independent life when he eventually got out of hospital. But in the end, in the spring of 2014, the arm snapped and had to be amputated from the elbow. As well as the devastating physical effects, the illness also wreaked a devastating effect on his partner Lucy and his son Sam, who is now 5 years of age. In one heartbreaking scene, Sam, who was three at the time, refuses to kiss his father after he has surgery to reconstruct his lips. The programme will follow the father and son's emotional paths to rediscovering their love, as well as exploring the love which Lucy has for her man. "I absolutely love him," she said. "When I got with Alex, I didn't care who it was, as long as he made me smile and made me a cup of tea in the morning. The tea is gone, but he still makes me smile, and he's the only person that does that," she added. In the future, Alex plans to set up a charitable foundation to help others affected by toxic shock syndrome. And there's a photograph of Alex, which he has a lip-like mask over his mouth, so you can see why a young child would be sort of frightened of that. And he's there with his son Sam, a beautiful little boy, aged 5. And the prosthetics that he has for his arms, you can see just behind the child in the photograph.
Seaward Properties is hosting a follow-up exhibition on Tuesday to discuss the master plan for the controversial development of land to the east of Alsford. The developer is promoting land at Sun Lane, which is Winchester City Council's preferred option for housing in the local plan. The local plan part two was submitted to the planning inspectorate for examination in March, with hearings expected in July. Seaward's original exhibition asks residents for their preference on the design and size of the 320 homes, the look and uses of the 15 hectares of open space, and the design of the employment zone premises. Since then, it has met residents who live immediately around the site, as well as community groups, to gain an understanding about their priorities. From the feedback received, residents identified the following priorities for Sun Lane: a preference for small houses, 1 to 3 bedroom, to address those trying to get on the housing ladder and those looking to downsize; a preference for a scheme of high quality traditional design; a preference for the open space to have a natural informal feel with high quality play areas, areas of wildflower and grass planting, pathways for running, cycling and dog walking; a preference for the employment zones premises to be low-level barn-style developments. The follow-up exhibition is being held at Oxford Community Centre in West Street from 3:30pm to 7:30pm. Development in Alsford has been a subject of controversy for several years. Towns the size of Alsford have been told by the City Council that they must accept 500 new homes over the next 20 years. But the town is divided between those who live near Sun Lane, who say the countryside should be preserved, with development pepper-potted around the town. Others, who tend not to live close to Sun Lane, say placing the development there would be better for the town as a whole. Part of the development will be commercial stroke industrial, with access off the A31 bypass. Anyone unable to attend the exhibition or would like further information should contact the project's free phone information line 0800 298 7040.
Doc's Marathon Effort for Mental Health Cause. A Bishop's Waltham surgeon raised thousands of pounds for a mental health charity in memory of his younger brother. Orthopaedic consultant Andrew Flood, who works at Southampton NHS Treatment Centre, ran the Gran Canarias Marathon to raise awareness as well as money for MIND. Mr. Flood said, "My brother Robert lived with paranoid schizophrenia. He sadly committed suicide, and it had a huge impact on the family. I hope that raising money and awareness may make a small difference and stop another tragedy. It is important that more people are made aware of the issues and that the stigma is removed, so that more people will feel encouraged in coming forward and getting the help and support they need." Andrew raised £1,330. Care UK, which runs the treatment centre on behalf of the NHS, contributed an additional £1,000 through its Working in the Community Fund. Mr. Flood said, "It was his colleagues at the centre, based at the Royal Southampton Hospital in Southampton, that helped to get him through the training in the cold, wet English winter, as well as the scorching heat of the race. They were incredible," he said. "They supported me all the way, and they were very generous with donations."
What a racket in City Centre. With Wimbledon less than 2 months away, the tennis season is getting into full swing. but not many shoppers in Winchester were expecting the sport, traditionally played on enclosed courts, to come to the High Street. There was a slightly surreal sight on Monday as the Winchester Tennis Festival pitched up in the city centre. The event was enjoyed by hundreds of people on the temporary courts in the pedestrian precinct. There was also a variety of tennis-related activities for people to enjoy. Amanda Ford, head of sport and physical activity at Winchester City Council, said, "These events are the perfect opportunity for families to have fun playing tennis. Everyone who attends can also find out how to take advantage of the new summer membership offer for families at their nearest tennis club. There will be another festival in the city on August the 29th, and the Great British Tennis Weekend comes to River Park Leisure Centre on May the 14th to the 15th. And there's photographs of these little tennis courts the whole way up the High Street, which frankly would make it impossible to do any shopping there at all, worse than the market. And various children playing tennis, including Lizzie Butcher, an older person, and Milo Mandolini. I'd like to be called Milo Mandolini. And some other children hitting against sort of low walls that can return the ball to them."
Boys hailed for courage in attack. They are the brave boys who helped stop a vicious attack by two dogs on a schoolboy. As reported in the Chronicle, Adil Chowdhury was savaged by two out-of-control Rottweilers in November and suffered serious injuries. However, his friends who were walking home with him called out for assistance, and two teenagers, Harry Redsall and William Hunter, both aged 13, rushed to help. The attack happened in Otterbourne, close to the Otter pub. Now the six boys from Otterbourne, Eastleigh and Chandler's Ford have been nominated for the Chief Constable Awards for Bravery. Adil Chowdhury, aged 12, has also been nominated for the award. Mrs. Chowdhury, Adil's mother, said, "We are so proud of our son for the courage, determination and positivity in his approach to recovery. Words cannot express our gratitude to the immensely brave boys at the scene who saved my son without thought to themselves and were so quick to get help. The boys and many others have continued to support my son through his recovery. Thank you to everyone," said Mrs. Chowdhury. Dozens of police officers and the force helicopter responded to the emergency on November the 13th to track down the dogs. PC Craig Robinson from the Northern Investigations team said, "A significant number of police resources were deployed in this incident and great care was given to capture these dogs humanely without anyone else getting hurt. Thankfully, dog attacks of this severity are a rare occurrence in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The bravery shown by this young victim is admirable, as are the efforts of those who stopped to help him." Roland Dixon, aged 29, of Boyot Lane, Otterbourne, was found guilty at trial at Basingstoke Magistrates Court of two counts of being in charge of a dog dangerously out of control and causing injury, and was ordered to pay £3,000 compensation and £650 costs. Lindsay Scott, aged 28, of the same address, admitted the same two charges and was ordered to pay £2,000 compensation. The two dogs, Crusoe and Columbus, were due to be put down within 21 days unless an appeal was lodged by Monday, May the 2nd. The Chronicle understands that an appeal has been lodged. All seven boys will be officially commended for their bravery at the Chief Constable's Awards Ceremony, scheduled for Friday, May the 27th. Adil, a pupil at Thorndon School, spent 4 days in Southampton General Hospital. And there is a small photograph of Adil with his father, Shoaib, and his, you can't see the injuries very closely, but Adil's got the inside of his right leg very, very much bound up and dressed and warm, but otherwise, you know, not looking too bad.
£25,000 lottery winner to treat his grandchildren. A long stock man is celebrating after winning £25,000 on the postcode lottery. Henry Cooper, age 66, said he would be using some of the money to buy presents for his grandchildren. The lottery raises money for charities across the UK, and that have benefited from it include the Wessex Cancer Trust near Eastleigh and All Saints Preschool in Winchester. Mr. Cooper said, "I feel absolutely brilliant. The first thing that went through my head was, wow, it was just so exciting. As my wife Heather and I pulled out the cheque, I kept seeing more and more zeros. It was just fantastic. I look after my grandchildren and they might get a few presents. I just took partial retirement and every little helps. This has come just at the right time. If people don't think you win, I've been playing for a year now and I've won £25,000. And there's a photograph of Henry with an advertising cheque in his hands, a large cheque, £25,000 written on it. And he's looking as though he feels absolutely brilliant. Equally, there's a photograph of his wife standing next to him. She has one hand on the cheque and she looks delighted too.
Okay, hybrid plan to reduce impact of water taxis. The water taxis of Venice could be greener and more efficient in the future thanks to a hybrid motor invented by a Hampshire firm. Reap Systems in Southampton have developed a drop-in hybrid electric drivetrain for easy installation in the city's existing fleet. Venice, a UNESCO World Heritage City, has approximately 20,000 leisure craft and 550 taxi boats to serve 32 million visitors a year. All are currently diesel-driven, meaning Venice suffers from alarming levels of air and noise pollution, as well as the vibration effect of these engines, which is shaking the foundations of the city's sinking architecture. The firm's chief technical officer, Dr. Dennis Durfel, explained, "The city, its residents and visitors will benefit from reduced air, water and noise pollution. Its taxi operators will get lower fuel consumption, operating costs and overall cost of ownership, plus greater reliability and longer life without sacrificing performance." He hopes to convince the city authority in Venice, who are currently working on new legislation concerning pollution from waterborne traffic, to convert their own boats and then bring in legislation requiring the owner-operators of the taxis to follow suit. The firm bought a 1980s water taxi, which they have had refurbished to test the prototype in August. They will tow the 9-metre craft by trailer to Venice in August for tests. A former soldier in the Germany Army, Dennis, founded Reap Systems after completing a PhD at Southampton University on energy management. And as a photograph of Dr. Dennis Durfel with a Venice water taxi, all spruced up and ready to be dragged back to Venice for testing.
Charity's lunch has top style. A glamorous lunch at the Hotel Dauphin in Winchester has raised almost £2,000 for the Haven Breast Cancer Charity. Hairdresser to the stars Guy Kramer, who has styled the locks of celebrities and royalty around the world, left his salon in Parchment Street to host a lobster and champagne lunch at the hotel, where he regaled his audience with celebrity stories and top hairstyling tips. He created 4 elegant and simple hairstyles and gave instructions on how to achieve the look at home. Guy then held an auction of tempting treats, including a night and dinner at the Hotel Dauphin, vouchers for Winchester jeweller Justice and Alsford boutique Moda Rosa, a Guy Kramer haircut at home, champagne and chocolates, and a sophisticated pain pod medical device. The auction raised just over £1,000, which was added to the profits from ticket sales. All money raised will go to the Haven, which provides personalised care and support to people through the experience of breast cancer. Women are my business and my life, and I like to be able to give something back. 1 in 8 women in the UK will develop breast cancer in their lifetime. So I think it is very important to help this wonderful charity support those women and make this traumatic time, a little easier. And there is a photograph of Guy Kremer hosting styling the Stars lunch, that's what it was called, at the Hotel Duvine in Winchester. Guy is pictured with model Lainey Boyce. And there is a picture of people attending this lunch. It doesn't say who they are, apart from their names, or why they are there. But anyway, there's Wendy Kemp, Julie Wyeth Robinson, Eve Davey, Julia Stewart, and Tina Hiscox. And it's photographed at the Hotel Duvine. And then there's two other smaller photographs with Julie Foster and Nikki Hill at the Styling Stars lunch. And the last one is Bea Bradley and Oliver Welby at the lunch.
Royal recognition for twins. When James and Arabella Haydar drew a picture of the Queen, they had no idea it would be royally recognised. But the 5-year-old twins were in for quite the surprise when they received a letter from Buckingham Palace. Their mother, Elizabeth Haydar from Otterbourne, said the idea came about when they were discussing the Queen back in March, ahead of her 90th birthday. James drew a picture of the Queen in the garden, and Arabella went for a portrait. Arabella, who attends St. Swithin's School, and James, who goes to the Pilgrims, showed their royal artwork to the class before being told their artwork had been given a royal response. The letter back to them reads, "Dear James and Arabella, the Queen wishes me to write and thank you for your letter and splendid pictures you drew, especially for Her Majesty, on the occasion of her 90th birthday." Mrs. Haydar said, "It was quite unusual, and it is refreshing to know that some small things are still appreciated, especially as Her Majesty must get so many letters each week. It makes you feel closer to them, and it certainly warms us to the family. It really was refreshing that at the end of the letter, you get a response. She is amazing. She's a wonderful role model, and I think this response rounds off our feeling that she is an amazing lady. It's not the first time the talented twins have hit the headlines, as they were recognised for volunteering at the old parsonage home in Otterbourne, where they entertained residents. And there's a charming photograph of James and Arabella smiling away, surrounded by crayons of different colours, pencils, and the two portraits, one of the Queen in the garden and one of the portrait of Her Majesty. And Arabella is holding the letter from Buckingham Palace, which has a photograph of the Queen endorsed on the side of the page. Very nice photograph.
Inquiry after delay in finding body in flat. An inquiry is underway after a pensioner living in sheltered accommodation lay dead for almost 2 weeks before his body was discovered. The death of the 70-year-old tenant went unnoticed until neighbours noticed a smell coming from second floor flat and raised the alarm. Neighbours at Sutherland's Court in Chandler's Ford say police visited the flats and told them he had been dead for about 12 days. Pensioners criticised the delay in finding the body and claimed that cuts had been made in the warden service previously provided by First Wessex. One woman said, "It left us feeling uneasy about our own safety." Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, pledged to look into why it took so long for the pensioner's body to be found. Veteran Eastleigh councillor Godfrey Olson said, "I'm very disappointed in First Wessex. I've always believed the service they provide to be of the highest order. I'm sure they will also be disappointed that something has slipped through the net, People go into sheltered accommodation for safety and security, and I hope First Wessex will look at their system to see if it can be improved. Although Sutherland's Court is older people's accommodation, they don't have a resident warden or a visiting warden. The system relies on tenants pulling a cord to get help if someone's in trouble. The tenants are a caring community who look out for each other, so I'm not sure what went wrong. Councillor Liz Fairhurst, the County Council Executive Member for Adult Social Care, described the delay in finding the man's body as desperately sad. She added, "I'd have thought there's bound to be an inquiry." The man who has not been named is understood to have lived at Sutherland's Court for only a few months. A neighbour who did not want to be named said, "For 12 days a body was decomposing in the flat. I was in utter shock when I found out what had happened. It was so upsetting, especially as this is sheltered accommodation." A First Wessex spokesman said the incident was very unfortunate, and although unable to comment on how long the body may have lain undiscovered, said the matter was being investigated by the association. The gentleman who died did not have one of the individual care packages that are organised with the council according to the personal care needs.
Outdoor store opening to create 10 jobs. Despite many shops closing down in the city, almost 10 jobs are set to be created with the opening of a new outdoor retailer. Taking up the currently unoccupied building next to Holland and Barrett on Winchester High Street will be Mountain Warehouse. The building was previously used by banking group Santander. Described by themselves as a quality outdoor clothing and equipment brand, the company sells everything needed for outdoor activities, from tents to rain jackets. A date for the grand opening has yet to be officially announced, but the company expects to start trading at their new store from the end of May. Mountain Warehouse have told the Chronicle they will take on 7 new employees. Something dodgy about the mathematics in this article. A spokesperson for the company said, "We've been looking to get into Hampshire's county city for some time. In what is a bright, vibrant city high street, it has been challenging to find the right location. With its heritage and tourism links, it was a fabulous opportunity which we couldn't miss." And there's a little photograph of the location of Mountain Warehouse's new store.
King Alfred Trophy contested at Wreck. The trees look wintry, but last Sunday saw the third King Alfred Trophy cricket matches played at North Walls Wreck in Winchester. 4 local teams competed to get their hands on the trophy: St Giles Hill, the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, the Racketeers, and new for 2016, the Hyde All-Stars. In almost perfect playing conditions, the teams fought hard for the trophy, with welcome breaks for an excellent lunch and tea. The final playoff ended in victory for the Racketeers over St Giles Hill and retention of the King Alfred Trophy, which was presented by General Sir Anthony Walker to the winning captain, Mike Foulkes. As well as congratulating all players for their cricketing skills, Sir Tony updated the teams on progress towards building a new cricket pavilion at North Walls, which it is hoped will be ready for the 2017 season. The trophy was first contested in May 2014 at Save the Wrecks Grand Day Out, organised to highlight the importance of preserving the green space from the risk of development. The campaign group received the welcome news at the end of that same year that this location would no longer be considered as an option for the siting of a new leisure centre. Rather, to refurbish the existing River Park Leisure Centre at its current site, or create new facilities at Bar End. Discussions are still going on at the City Council. Well, there's a photograph The cricket team all applauding Mike Foulkes as he receives the trophy from General Sir Anthony Walker, the King Alfred Trophy.
Airport celebrates new flights. A new air service between Southampton and Munich has taken off for the first time. BMI Regional's new route offers direct flights from Southampton to Munich twice a day. As the first plane from Munich arrived at the airport, fire trucks sent up a welcoming arch of water across the runway. Dave Lees, managing director of Southampton Airport, then cracked open a bottle of champagne to toast the new service, while Jochen Schnatt, BMI's chief commercial officer, bought traditional German biscuits to celebrate the event. Mr. Lees said, "Scheduled air services to Munich have been requested by businesses in the local region, as well as by holidaymakers in Germany looking to start their cruises from Southampton. Munich is also the home of many major companies that have links with our region, including Airbus and BMW. We look forward to welcoming BMI to Southampton Airport for what promises to be a successful route." Munich is an important destination for business travellers, as it is one of Germany's main financial centres and home to home of global brands, including BMW and Siemens. For leisure visitors, Munich offers the famous Oktoberfest, the English Garden and spectacular Christmas markets. The city is also a gateway to skiing and hiking holidays in the Alps. Thanks to BMI's agreement with Lufthansa, passengers flying from Southampton can connect to a further 200 global destinations from the Bavarian capital.
Winchester Samaritans have officially returned to their base. In a day of celebrations, dozens of people gathered at the Samaritans Upper High Street office, which has undergone an extensive refurbishment. As reported in the Chronicle, the Samaritans in Winchester moved from the premises to allow work to be carried out. The temporary move caused concern for those involved with the charity. They feared being away from their usual base made it more difficult for vulnerable people to speak to volunteers face to face. However, it was a case of cheers all round as dozens of people gathered to welcome staff back to the office. The ribbon was cut by Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, last Thursday. Former Director of Winchester Samaritans, Hugh Sanderson, said, "It has been a long, hard road, but we got there in the end. Today is just about coming back, as people know we've been out of here as it's been refurbished, and it is considerably improved." He said considerable amounts of money were spent before the refurbishment on maintenance costs. Mr. Sanderson said, "Essentially, it means we can continue in this base for the next 10 years and have no worries about the property." Half the premises in Upper High Street were sold for housing, while another flat has been developed for the charity to rent. Volunteers operated temporarily from the top floor of the Olive Branch Centre in St Clement Street, off Southgate Street. Service was unaffected. Anyone interested in becoming a Samaritan for one shift a week is asked to ring 01962 856 312. Every year, the branch holds tens of thousands of phone, email, text and face-to-face conversations with people in distress. Winchester Samaritans say over the last 40 years, they have had more than 1 million people contact them and had 1,500 volunteers helping. Councillor Clear said, "I'm just delighted that this premises have been opened in my year as mayor. The Samaritans in Winchester do a first-class service and we could not do without them. There's usually a shortage of volunteers to ensure a smooth 24-hour a day, 7 days a week cover for calls." And there is a photograph of all these happy people cheering and smiling outside their refurbished offices in Upper High Street.
Fire command and control system goes live. a new single command and control system for fire services in Hampshire, Dorset, Devon, Somerset and Wiltshire is live. The single system, implemented under a programme that is estimated to save the three services £16.91 million by 2024, provides enhanced control centre functionality, greater resilience and reduced costs. Capita has been working with the fire services for the past 2 years. Capita's technology has enabled a single system networked to serve local control rooms in Exeter, Devizes and Eastleigh. The integrated system allows the three services to work together, sharing resources during busy periods or a major incident, helping to enhance service levels while improving public and firefighter safety. The partnership will benefit from increased efficiencies through a secure infrastructure for telephony, airwave radio and data centres.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Excuse me. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
Albie Mins.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.